The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Proudly sponsored by Volkswagen. Volkswagen.ie.
Or knocked 51551 ray at rte.ie. Now, it's hard to believe that it's 12 years this May since the disappearance of Madeleine McCann. She was abducted or kidnapped 9 days before her fourth birthday, which means that she would be 16 this May. A new documentary on Netflix entitled The Disappearance of Madeleine McCann is an 8-part documentary, and it's been getting a lot of attention and there's been a lot of discussion around it. Two people who feature extensively in the documentaries are journalist Anthony Summers and Robin Swan, and they're also co-authors of the book Looking for Madeleine, which is republished, and they join us now from the Cork studio. Good afternoon, Anthony and Robin.
Good afternoon, Ray.
Yeah. Hello.
Thanks so much for coming into our Cork studio. You live in Waterford.
We do. We live in West Waterford. Have lived there since a very long time, since the 70s.
Right. Why did you choose Waterford?
It chose me. Okay. There's a wonderful river there, the River Blackwater.
Yeah.
And it chose me. Before I wrote my first book, I had wanted to come to Ireland for what I thought might just be a year. And I rented a place at the mouth of the river and eventually rowed upstream, and when the book succeeded, found myself a little ruin.
And God help me, I chose Anthony. So there we go.
There you go. And your children chose it by an accident of birth.
That's right.
So there you go. That's the family there. Okay, so the documentary, 8-hour-long documentaries on Netflix. What reaction have you got as a couple because you're in every episode, every documentary?
It's been fascinating. We've been sitting in the train going back and forth doing interviews and suddenly earwigging on young people behind us gossiping about the series and not realizing we were there. We've walked into elevators, heard people talking about it. In fact, I opened up a newspaper in this country a few days ago and saw that the Irish football team, the national team, and Mick McCarthy had them in the locker room. And what were the lads discussing? They were discussing the episodes of the McCann Netflix documentary.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it seems to be everywhere.
Perhaps our most important reaction, though, has been, I should make it absolutely clear that we were intensively interviewed for 2 days for the documentary, but we were not part of the project, part of the concept. And it was kept very secure while it was being made. We had the impression that the makers, the producers, were very responsible, even-handed, and I'm happy to say that they have justified that hope on our part. It's an even-handed, honest picture of this extraordinary story.
And Anthony, when you were writing the book, did you meet the McCanns?
Yes, I don't think we'd have kicked off the work if we had not done so. Remember that we got into it a long time after the story had started, after much hoo-ha and some very misleading headlines, particularly in the UK press, and also, of course, in the Portuguese press. And we kicked off the project by driving to see the McCanns, who had told us they would see us, through a snowstorm. Remember getting the ferry from Rosslare. Drove into a huge snowstorm and sat with them in the middle of winter. And most of the conversation was with Kate McCann, the little girl's, missing little girl's mother. And she listened and was helpful. And when her husband came home, you know, he's a cardiologist in Leicester in the UK, they made it clear that they were happy for us to do the book, but they wanted us to first and foremost to make contact with Scotland Yard. Their investigation was in full flood at that time, to make absolutely certain that nothing we did in our investigative work tripped wires, crossed with serious investigative leads that Scotland Yard were doing. So we hightailed it to London and saw the officer leading the investigation, Andy Redwood, and a senior colleague, and we motored very carefully all the way to the end with the knowledge, but not, don't get me wrong, they weren't giving us splendid leaks, but they were very careful and very honourable, and I hope we were too, and we made sure that we did not trip was, so to speak, with them.
And Robin, did you interview the McCanns for the book, or did you just get their approval?
It was more a matter of sort of hands-off. We yes. wanted to work independently. We would have loved okay. to have an extensive interview with them. In the end, they decided not to sit for something like that. So we relied on the best evidence we had, which were their many, many statements to the Portuguese police and Kate McCann's book, which has to be considered sort of their reflective, definitive telling of their side of events.
And this documentary then, the documentary makers approached the McCanns and they chose not to be involved in it.
That's true. And I suspect, and I don't know this, and I don't know anything more on this angle than you do, the McCanns have said they were concerned about the possibility of it hindering the investigation. I think that that was the same kind of thing they expressed to us when we approached them, that, you know, nothing happens that hinder the investigation. So that rings true to me. Sadly, there is also the fact that every time this story plays in the press, there are a brigade of armchair judges and juries who want to batter the McCanns anew with all sorts of conspiracy theories, and that's got to be a very tough position to be in, particularly for the parents of young children who are still at school and having to try to, as well as they can, get on with their lives.
Clarence Mitchell, who's the spokesperson for the McCanns, said on This Morning about the documentary, "This fuels those conspiracy theorists. There's whole websites and forums dedicated to vilifying Kate and Jerry and others around them, myself included. It's nonsense. If the allegations that have been disproven and discounted are aired again, I'm afraid it will fuel that. Kate and Jerry ignore all of that."
Well, I hope they do, and let me intervene for a second to say that is really not fair to the series. It is very, very balanced. They did the reporting, they showed the silly headlines that had emerged in the newspapers, which is part of all of our experience of the case, something that we've all seen, and they torpedoed some of the venomous slurs that have been spread about them, and they did so very effectively.
Is there any new information in the 8 hours of Netflix documentary?
I think there are some things that are, if not necessarily new, that certainly have never appeared on television before. There's an interview with the police dog handler whose work has been so much talked about. That's never been done before. There's a confrontational type exchange between a very highly regarded Portuguese journalist and the former Portuguese lead investigator about the leaks that were emerging from the Portuguese police force at the time. There's some very good interviewing with Jim Gamble, the former director of the Center for Missing and Exploited, the Center for Child Exploitation in the UK. Some really good perspectives that I think for the average person, a person who isn't steeped in every detail of this story, will really be new and revelatory.
Like you are. And the dogs come up over and over again. I would imagine in some of those conversations that you've eavesdropped on over the last few weeks, you would have heard that. So will you, just for people who don't know the ins and outs of it, would you just explain the whole dog thing to them?
I would hand that to Robin.
Right.
Well, late in the summer of 2007, when the Portuguese police were becoming frustrated with their lack of progress, they took the advice they had been given by the British and brought in a pair of British-trained dogs, one who was allegedly trained to pick up the scent of human cadaver, and the other who was trained to pick up the scent of decaying human blood. And these two dogs were dispersed at various points and alerted, gave their alert signals at a couple of occasions within the holiday flat the McCanns had occupied and to the car that the McCanns picked up and began renting about 3 or 4 weeks after Madeline disappeared, and a couple of other small items. This led to a forensic team going back to those locations and gathering what might be forensic evidence, and that was all sent off for DNA analysis. And people get very excited about the barking dogs. In the end, the DNA evidence that was gathered, the British Forensic Service concluded that it was not blood, that it was not Madeline's, and that it was of basically no relevance. And yet, those dog barks have been taken up and carried forward as alleged evidence of the McCanns' involvement in something to do with Madeline's disappearance. I would add that a year later, the same dogs were deployed at a very infamous child abuse and alleged child murder scene in Jersey. And the dog that was trained to scent cadaver got terribly excited and alerted over something round and shaped like a child's skull, which later turned out to be a coconut shell.
Okay.
They're not infallible.
Yes.
What the handler has himself said, and he said it, fair dues, he said it in his initial, before he'd even done the examination of the McCann's apartment, he told the Portuguese police in very clear terms, in writing, that his discoveries or his dog's apparent discoveries were only an indication of a possible finding, that they were pointless, useless, meant nothing at all, unless they were confirmed then by further evidence. Mm. Now, there was no further evidence in this case. The DNA conclusion by the British Forensic Science Service was conclusive that there was no DNA identifiable with Madeleine McCann or indeed with any members of the family. And to sum it up, we interviewed Dr. Maureen Smythe, who had headed the Forensic Service here in the Republic. And she said, and this is a quote, the DNA, such as it is amounts to, quote, a whole lot of nothing.
Right. Just looking at the documentary, I was impressed by the amount of paperwork you two have been through to write your book. Like, it's boxes and boxes and boxes. So ye would be experts on the case.
Well, every book we do, right, we gather thousands of documents, and you may find this hard to believe, but the number of boxes that the Madeleine McCann case occupies is quite small. But yes,
compared to some of them,
yes, because you did the full story of 9/11 and Osama bin Laden, and you did a biography of Frank Sinatra and Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So this is small by comparison, but
it happened to be small by comparison. Yes, we did have access to the Portuguese police file. This was not a great coup. After the police in Portugal initially archived, which is put it on the shelf, they ended their investigation without making any charges. By the way, exonerated any bad action, illegal actions on the part of the McCanns.
And you're emphatic in that, Anthony, that there is no evidence to suggest that Kate and Jerry McCann had anything to do
absolutely
with
not.
The disappearance of
we
their daughter.
We found not an iota during the 2+ years that we worked on it. No information that reflects badly on the McCanns at all. But what I was going to say is, in terms of the research we did with the papers, that when the case was archived by the Portuguese police, by law, the information on the case became most of it, except where it was particularly sensitive to people who might be in jail or on the way to jail or whatever, that most of the information, all the statements made by all the witnesses involved, were made public. That is to say, they were made public in Portuguese. An English translation had been made, which we then double-checked by, if we were using a piece of verbatim translation, we of course had it duly translated by listeners will know that we're in Cork at the moment in the Cork studio of RTE, and we had the translations done by a scholar in Cork.
Right. You've had loads of chats among yourselves and with other people over the years, and what is the question that comes up over and over again between the two of ye and from other people?
Well, it's the question I'm sure you're going to get to. What do we think really happened?
Yeah.
And sadly, there is no evidence in this case. There is this extraordinary dearth of physical evidence. There's some pretty good witness testimony that is suggestive of a possible planned abduction. And I think if we had to come down to one thing, we'd probably suggest that that seems the most likely to us. Now, to what end a planned abduction, an abduction in order to supply a child to a family who was desperate for one, an abduction for some darker purpose, that we have no notion of.
Yeah. Andy Redwood was put in place by Scotland Yard after David Cameron reopened the case was it 2011? And yeah. He was an expert on cold cases. And since then, which I didn't hear much about at the time, there was the story of an intruder breaking into a number of holiday homes, villas, apartments in the lead up to Madeleine's disappearance. What do you know about that?
Well, only too much. In the sense that it eventually emerged from the British police investigations that there had been no less than 28 episodes, intrusions into homes or apartments rented or owned by British people within 40 miles of Praia da Luz. A typical event would be that a man would enter an apartment while the parents were either out or quite often sleeping in another room, but present. And they would go into a little girl's room. In the case I'm about to talk about, the room was, there was a very young little girl, I think 7 or 8, and an older sister, 10, 11. And in one particular case, the intruder came in and got not onto at least the bed with the little girl. Eventually was sort of scared off because her sister, she said, "Is that you, Daddy?" or words to that effect. And of course gathered that it wasn't Daddy. But this man, and it gives you chills.
Yes, it does.
This man had a mask over his face, sort of like a medical mask, as best the kids could describe it, and sort of laundry or sheets or pillowcases or something like that wrapped around his feet. Presumably to avoid leaving telltale footprints on the floor, but for whatever reason, and this had happened on 28, something like that had happened on 28 occasions, often with no actual sexual activity taking place, but sometimes with an actual sexual assault. And the man was never caught, mothers and fathers of those children eventually told Kate McCann that they had been at the time very dissatisfied with the way it had been investigated by the Portuguese police. Just the local constabulary had been involved, but the true investigative force, the Policia Judiciária, PJ, had never been called in when, of course, they should have been.
Yeah.
Most shocking, perhaps, about that is that these cases, of course, were known to officialdom. They were known to people living in Portuguese people and residents of the Algarve. But people coming to, for example, the resort at which the McCann stayed had not been told either about these sexual episodes or warned that there had been an epidemic of pilfering and robbing of apartments. And one wonders whether the McCanns would have, on the night that they and their fellow doctors sat across the swimming pool but away from their children, just making checks every 20 minutes or half an hour, whether they would ever have left their children there had they been given any kind of warning that this kind of crime had been taking place.
I think the answer is they wouldn't have, isn't it?
Of course it is.
Yeah, it's a fascinating eight-part documentary, and that scene that you described there, they do a reconstruction of it, and I was watching it last night, and it's very chilling. It's up there with horror movies, probably even more horrific because you know it's real. Thanks so much for coming into our Cork studio, Anthony and Robin, and your book, Looking for Madeleine. It's been reprinted.
It has.
We've updated it, and it's being reprinted. Yes.
Okay. Thanks so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.